You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate here on WNYC and WNYC.org. As the governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm had to deal with budget shortfalls, high unemployment, big layoffs, and an uncertain future. And that was before the financial meltdown began in 2008. She looks back at her efforts to deal with these crises and position her troubled state for the future in her new book, A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future, which she's co-authored with her husband, Dan Mulhern. It's published by Public Affairs, and I'm so pleased that it brings Governor Granholm to the show today.
So glad to be here.
So I said as you walked in, you look like you're in such a good mood, you must not be governor of Michigan anymore.
Woo!
Man, you really got sort of hit with the, you know, with the hammer before the rest of the country did. And in a way, that's what's very helpful about the book, is you sort of walk us through all the things that happened and some of the things that you were able to do to fix things. So we'll get to all that. But first, you're not even American. You're from Canada.
I'm American. But I was born in Canada.
You were born in Canada.
I lived there for my first 4 years and then moved to the United States with my parents.
By the way, I hope people know that I'm kidding. Of course you're American. But you were
all
born
in... All those emails just starting from the Canadians.
I know. It sounds like suddenly like conservative talk radio here. You're not American. when did you move to Michigan? How old were you?
So we moved to California with my folks when I was 4 years old, and I married Michigan. My husband and I met at law school, and so I lived in Michigan for 26 years.
Now, a lot of people live in Michigan and don't decide to run for governor.
Figure, right?
Same thing almost anybody. What made you think, like, oh, that'll be a fun...
Well, you know, it's one of those things, and it's great that I authored this book with my husband, because when he was growing up, he thought he was going to run for governor of Michigan.
Now he doesn't have to.
Right? So it's a beautiful thing for him that he didn't have to do that, but he got a good seat on the, you know, in the sidecar. But it was really because I was attorney general first, and the seat opened up. And when in my first term, I'm a Democrat, and I was the only Democrat surrounded by House, Senate, Supreme Court, Attorney General, Secretary of State, all Republicans, and me. And so the reason why we wrote this book is because truly, what's happening in the country right now happened to Michigan first. And when everybody's sort of scratching their heads over, you know, how are we going to create jobs, all of that, you know, we understand what's going on in the economy and why jobs are not coming back. And it's because it's not cyclical. It's a structural change in the nation's economy. And especially, it obviously hit manufacturing very hard, but it's happening to other sectors too. And the question for us as a country is, what are we going to do about it?
Well, this is extremely refreshing, because you're the only person in and out of government who I've heard actually admit that. Because in Washington, what we hear a lot of is, oh, we're going to make America better again. We'll make it bigger and better. And we're hearing a lot of happy talk, not just from the Republicans, but from both sides. And you're actually telling the truth, which is the world is changing.
Yeah, the world is. I mean, the thing is, before, you know, in the 20th century, we relied on
I remember those.
Yeah,
days.
we were around.
Those were awesome.
Awesome days. But we were we hadn't entered as robustly into the trade agreements that we currently have, and we weren't, you know, the world wasn't as flat. So now, with technology and the flattening of the world and the movement of capital and all of that, we see that, you know, the corporations and the multinational corporations who are going to maximize shareholder value, of course they're going to do that in areas where they can invest at less expense. And so for us as a nation, you know, a lot of people think that we're just going to come back. Even this discussion in Washington now, we'll bide our time, you know, we'll get through this recession and it'll pop back. It's not going to just pop back. We have to do something to make America have jobs in this country. And tax cuts alone, which seems to be the prescription, or just cutting government alone, and this is, you know, another reason why this book, I think, is illustrative for the nation, is, you know, in my first term, I cut taxes 99 times on the hopes that it was going to trickle down and create jobs in Michigan. By the time I left office, we were 48th in the country in terms of the size of government. By far, I cut more out of government spending than any state in the country. Our corporate tax burden dropped more than any state in the country. And so you would think that with all that cutting and shrinking, that we would have the best unemployment rate in the nation and not the worst. But In fact, we continued to implode. And the reason why is because those prescriptions were 20th century prescriptions. We are not in a closed system anymore. And our manufacturers and suppliers and others were moving to other countries because that's where they could maximize return for their shareholders. And so for the only thing that worked was finally when the Obama administration came into power, and they obviously intervened in the free market to save the auto industry, but they also gave us an opportunity to invest in sectors that we knew we could be competitive in globally, like the lithium-ion battery for the electric vehicle, some clean energy solutions, et cetera. It was only then, with that investment, that our unemployment rate dropped 6 times faster than the national average in 2010. Gallup said that we were the most improved job creation. But without that partnership with the federal government, there is no way this would have happened. And no state alone has the ability to compete with China or India or other economic competitors who are aggressively going after international companies to create jobs for their people. So we got to think like that. We have to think, what do we need to do to create jobs in America for American citizens? Public, but private sector jobs too.
I'm talking to former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. She's the author of a new book, A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future, which she co-authored with her husband, Dan Mulhern. We're at WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate. Okay, now, everything you said makes perfect sense, but I repeat, nobody is saying these things, because what you're essentially saying is we don't need more tax cuts. We need bigger government. We need more government intervention. We need an activist government.
An activist government. And I don't want to say a big bloated
government. Not more bureaucracy.
Right. We need an active, smart government that has a comprehensive economic strategy to keep jobs in America. You know, every state, we're always competing against one another for jobs. So you're moving the chairs around on the deck of the Titanic. That's not a good national strategy for job creation when, you know, Hu Jintao, the premier of China, told George Bush what keeps him up at night is creating 25 million jobs a year for his people. He's obsessed with job creation. We got to get obsessed with job creation in America too, and recognize that the other countries are not abiding by the, you know, they're not bowing to the altar of the free market. They are happy that we are laissez-faire, which means do nothing, hands off, right? Leave alone. We can't just leave it alone, or we'll continue to be bystanders to the flight of jobs.
Is this your, if you were going to be evangelical and try to preach to the Democratic Party, would this be your message? Put yourself as, don't just try to do what the Republicans are saying. Yeah, we'll also cut taxes. Yeah, we'll also do this. We'll also cut spending. We're actually going to offer something different. And maybe right now, at this point, it isn't like President Obama's doing great in the polls or anything. He's kind of, it might actually not be a bad time to roll the dice maybe and say, offer something different. Would you, if you were talking to him now instead of me, would you be honest with him and say, dude, come on.
Dude, with all due respect, dude, sir.
do you think this is a winning message? It's controversial because you're telling the truth, and that's always controversial in politics.
Right. It is controversial, but I think people resonate to the notion of creating jobs in America. And it makes sense when you think about for example, the president has just come out with this prescription for paying for his jobs act. And one of the prescriptions is to make the capital gains tax the same rate as everybody else is paying, right? So move it from 15% up and use that money then to invest in tax credits for job creation in the United States. Now, that's tied to job creation. But if you left the capital gains tax at 15%, what are those who are benefiting from that extra money doing with it? They are investing in job creation. But where? The jobs that are being created are not being created here. They're investing in international markets and in companies that are traded on the Fortune 100, the Fortune 500. Those are multinational companies. Those multinational companies are taking the benefit of that tax break and investing it to help their shareholders, but they're investing it elsewhere. The Chamber of Commerce just came, the Department of Commerce just had data about what the last decade looked like. And to me, this should make people's hair stand on fire. Stand on end and be on fire. not to mix my metaphors, but the Department of Commerce said that in the past decade, the multinational American-based multinational companies created 2.9 million jobs, and they cut 2.5 million jobs, excuse me, they created 2.9 million jobs elsewhere and cut 2.5 million jobs in America. So there was a net increase of 500,000 jobs. But all of that action was happening overseas. And I was interviewing a panel of multinational CEOs, and I said to them, you know, what is it that the United States should do as an economic strategy to get you to invest in the United States? Which country does it best? Who should we model ourselves after? And they all said, Singapore. I said, why? What do they do that we don't do? And they said, one, they identified their strengths, their geographic strengths. They're going after international companies directly and asking them to come and invest. They make it seamless. They've, you know, compressed the permitting time. They provide them access to capital. They cluster development so that they're close to suppliers. They have a strategy, and they're the best. Well, why can't we have a uniquely American strategy for getting international and national growth here in this country? But laissez-faire means that you're doing nothing.
Well, that is a grim and accurate assessment of what's going on right now. You have tremendous gridlock, which is, I guess, a kind way of saying what's going on, of describing what's going on in Washington. You were handed a similar deck of cards, as you mentioned. You were surrounded by people of the other party. How were you able to get anything done in that environment?
Well, you know, it's interesting because truly everything that's happening on the federal level did happen in Michigan first, including a nascent version of the Tea Party, which headed the Senate, in my case, and refused to compromise one dime, not one penny, on revenue. Absolutely. And he was proud of wearing the mantle of an obstructionist and said it publicly, that his role was to lay his body across the tracks to prevent revenues, to prevent any kind of increases, to prevent any growth in government. And so what we ended up having to do was we shut the government down because I wasn't going to cut education any further. We had cut it a lot already, and it just wasn't doing the trick. And I said, we cannot do this if we're going to invest in the brains of the people who will be working in the companies that we want to attract. We just can't do it anymore. So we had to shut government down. And I think this is interesting when you think about what the president is doing now with a different tack. He is being tough and strong, taking it to their districts. We did that as well. And telling the people who hired those members of Congress that you hired them and you can fire them. And if they're not representing you, you should throw them out. You should tell your employees, who are the members of Congress, what you want them to do. And so I hope that he gets a more cooperative Congress either before or after the election. And by the way, there's one other parallel that I would just point out too, which is that in 2006, I ran for re-election, and we had the worst economy in the nation. Michigan did. And I was running again, and I was underwater in my approval rating. And I ran against a billionaire, a guy who had an unlimited amount of money. And I still won by the largest number of votes ever cast because it was all about a choice. And the president is offering now a choice. Who's on your side?
And it is a choice, but we're now wrestling in Washington over a jobs package and trying to create an additional program to create some jobs in this country. And how will we reach a consensus when both sides, each side, has such a different view of what will even create a job? The president is more of an activist, you know, as you described. The president did successfully bail out the auto industry, and the auto industry's in the intervening years has actually come roaring back to life. They've shown
phenomenal results.
Yeah. If anything, I don't really understand why he's not talking. If I were him, I would be talking about that all day long.
Yeah.
I would just say
it's
a good thing that happened.
Yeah.
But the Republicans and you saw this in your state just wanted to cut taxes. So if there's you're talking about two sides who have completely different theories of how to create a job.
Right, and I'm not even talking about theory. I mean, you know, if tax cuts worked, I would be all
right
about it.
But you tried.
We tried. I mean, 99 tax cuts in my first term, really. I don't know how much more we could have cut, but it just didn't work. I'm just about the empirical data.
Right.
What works and what doesn't work. What didn't work was shrinking and cutting because we're in a, because the system, the world has changed. And that's why those who are latching onto theories that may have worked well in the last century have got to realize that because of globalization and our economic competitors, that we got to devise a different economic strategy for the United States because our competitors are only too happy to take advantage of our hands-off posture. I was in China in March, and we were meeting with a group of officials, and it was all about energy and what China was doing to create energy jobs in China. And one of the officials pulls me aside and he said, "So when do you think the United States is going to get a national energy strategy?" And I said, the Tea Party, Congress division, I just don't know. And this is what he did. He rubs his hands together with glee and smiles, and he says, "Take your time." Because
ouch.
I know they see our passivity as their opportunity. And every day businesses are making decisions about where to expand and where to locate. And once they go, we're not getting it back. So this ridiculous notion, I mean, I shouldn't say ridiculous because it's an old theory and it worked before. But I just want to, I want people to see what happened in Michigan as empirical evidence of what works and what doesn't work.
Exactly. So they have to read your book first.
They
got to
read the book.
Okay. We'll get that. We'll make that
a
happen.
Governor's story.
A governor's story. We'll make that happen. Now, have you been watching? Let's turn to politics a little bit. What's going
we
on?
We haven't
in the
been 20- talking about politics.
No, we've been steering clear of that totally because it's no fun at all. Have you been watching the Republican debates?
Oh yeah. With glee.
Let me ask you this question: are any of these people qualified to be president? I'm not sure that any of them are qualified to run a Radio Shack, but that's that's just my opinion. That's not
I'm
the
glad
opinion
to know
of,
where you stand.
That's not the opinion of WNYC or WNYC.org.
Good to put that disclaimer on, or this will be the last time.
But who do you feel is the most qualified of this crop? The pizza guy?
No.
I
would say. Because do you like the
pizza? I like the pizza guy. I like that 999. Yeah, that 999 program. I have no idea what it means, but I like just like the way it says 999. That just it's like nine toppings. I don't know. So who do you like? I mean, now who do you think? Like, if you were going to put one of these guys in the White House with the nukes and everything, who do you think could do it?
John Huntsman.
John, yeah, that's a good choice.
Yeah.
So it won't be him.
And it won't be him, right?
So
I
that
mean,
leaves
I,
us
you know,
with the
governors
others.
Have, it's a good run-up to the mm-hmm. office of being president. So, you know, being an executive and you handle the issues on a smaller scale. So governors are clearly qualified or they're good, you know.
They're executives.
They're executives. But, you know, the question is, what are they saying that they are going to do that's different than what we've done in the past to be able to turn the tide of these of job losses? I mean, it's all about jobs. That should be the only thing people talk about. And if the prescriptions that they're offering are the same prescriptions that have not done the trick, then we got to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, I mean, none, you know, I'm a Democrat, so I'm supporting the president 100%. And I think he's on the right path now that he's really coming out swinging. But I think he had to do what he did to get to this point, which is to show that he was reasonable. He had to demonstrate that he was willing to compromise.
Mm-hmm.
He had to be the adult in the room so that now when that didn't work, and people saw in that last debate, in the second of the last debate, when every one of those Republicans was asked the question, would you take 10 parts cut to one part revenue, a 10-to-1 deal in your favor, would you take that? And every one of them rejected it. Nobody looking at that would say that's a reasonable decision. Any business person who had a 10-to-1 deal in their favor who wouldn't grab it and run, that's just crazy. So I think that demonstrated that alone, when they raised their hands to say that they would not take it, that alone, I think, was the biggest indication that this is not a compromising crowd.
No.
And that they are not acting in a rational way, given what we're experiencing.
Okay, well, let me ask the question a different way. No, let me ask a different question. Who do you think
I
of this crowd?
I gave you the answer
to
that.
You did. Well, now that you're not in office, you'll answer anything. I mean, I know how you politicians work.
You never interviewed me while I was in office.
No, I know. I'm sure you were very blunt. let me ask you, who do you think of this crop of candidates, who do you think is going to get the nomination? I know it's early yet.
Yeah, it is early. I still think it's probably going to be Romney.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I just don't know what's going to happen with Rick Perry. He is, you know, he's a bit of a wild card. However, from the intel that I've heard, now I know these governors because we all belong to the National Governors Association. We all serve together. But, you know, I think that Perry is a good campaigner, and I think he is a likable guy in terms of his personal ability to connect with people. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing about Social Security, the Ponzi scheme and the movement to secede and all of that, I can just tell you in Michigan and the industrial Midwest, that's just, we can't connect with that.
Well, often. What about Mitt Romney during the auto bailout? He said you should let them all fail, too big to fail. How's that going to play?
Let Detroit probably, go bankrupt.
He might, and Michigan should be a state that he has some
you
roots there.
Right, he was born there.
But I don't think, I think he'd have a hard time winning Michigan, huh?
He would. In fact, Bob Lutz, who's a Republican, but who's with General Motors, and who himself was contemplating running for governor as a Republican, he said that while Mitt Romney, he would have supported him in the past because of the op-ed that he penned in the New York Times saying, let Detroit go bankrupt, he would never support him. So anybody in Michigan who is watching this and who knows how important the auto industry is should look at that Mitt Romney op-ed and say that, you know, he's not our friend.
Now, something that our listeners may not be aware of, but I think is fascinating, maybe your most fascinating credit, is that you have something in common with Tina Fey, because in Joe Biden's debate preparations, you played the role of Sarah Palin.
I did.
And was that, how did you do it?
And I didn't do it as well as Tina Fey.
Let's no one does
put
it.
That on the table.
Look, Sarah Palin doesn't do it as
yes,
well as Tina Fey.
That's so
does
true.
It. But did you... how did you do it? I mean, you don't have to do Sarah Palin for us, though. And you're Midwestern enough that you sort of can pull that off, because she has that Midwestern accent.
She's got the upper, you know, the Northern accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually a really fun and interesting thing to do. And truly, when I became a paleontologist, you know,
well, of course.
I knew her moves, and I had studied her debates when she ran for governor of Alaska. And at that point, you may recall, she was known as the, you know, the maverick. She would take on her party. She was taking on others. She was, you know, she was well thought of. And so she's become more of a caricature as time has gone on. So I think I did her justice at the time. And I think Joe Biden actually did really well in the debate.
Do you think Sarah Palin is going to run? I think there's not
no,
a chance.
No. No way.
It's over.
No way.
Well, As a comedian, I'm saddened by this
I'm
news.
Sure
we'll end with a little bit of downbeat economic news for me. But I'm so glad you came in. I've been speaking with former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm about her memoir, A Governor's Story, The Fight for Jobs and America's Economic Future, which she co-authored with her husband, Dan Mulhern. It's published by Public Affairs. Governor, thank you for joining us.
Delightful. Thanks so much.